own devotees, via, by intelligence, virachitam, meditated on, bahu saustavya adhyam, very beautifully decorated, mayam, of me, bhavasya, of Lord Shiva, bhavatam, of all of you, cha, and bhajatam, bhajantam, worshipped, angam, the figure, nemu, bowed down, niriksha, after seeing, na, not, itripta, satiated, drishta, eyes, muda, joyously, kai, by their heads. Translation: the exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord who thus manifests himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded him with unsated eyes, and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. Please repeat: the exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord who thus manifests himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded him with unsated eyes and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. The beauty of the Lord was so enchanting that it could not be sufficiently described. The goddess of fortune is supposed to be the most beautiful sight within the spiritual and material creations of the Lord. She has a sense of being the most beautiful, yet her beauty was defeated when the Lord appeared. In other words, the beauty of the goddess of fortune is secondary in the presence of the Lord. In the words of Vaishnava poets, it is said that the Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds and thousands of cupids. He is therefore called Madan Mohan. It is also described that the Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Poets describe that under those circumstances, although Lord Krishna is Madan Mohana, he becomes Madan Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. The devotees of the Lord in Vaikuntha planets want to see their Lord as most beautiful, but the devotees in Gokula or Krishna Loka want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. The adjustment is that the Lord, being Bhaktavatsala, or one who wants to please his devotees, assumes such features so that devotees like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods may be pleased. Here also, for the devotee sages, the Kumaras, the Lord appeared in his most beautiful feature, and they continued to see him without satiation and wanted to continue seeing him more and more. End of purport. Om Ajnanam Tarandasya Jnanchalakaya Chakshurunatana Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutadehi Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Kitamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vishadini Devi Shesha Shandavari Pasyate Satarini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Binda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I read text 41, translation. His countenance was distinguished by cheeks that enhanced the beauty of his alligator-shaped pendants, earrings, which outshone lightning. His nose was prominent, and his head was covered with a gem-studded crown. A charming necklace hung between his stout arms, and his neck was adorned with the gem known by the name Kastuba. 42. The exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord who thus manifests himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded him with unstated eyes and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. Lord Brahma is addressing the demigods who have come because of disturbance in the universe, and he is describing about the kingdom of God, and he's going to tell why, is how the four Kumaras went there and they were cursed. They cursed Jayavijay, and thus this is the cause of, they were cursed to appear as demons, and this is a cause of the disturbance by one of them as appeared in the womb of Diti and causing disturbance in the universe. So he's given the story how it happened. So here he's given the description of the kingdom of God, how the four Kumaras went to Vaikuntha because of the transcendental situation. They're the firstborn, self-manifest sons of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was manifest directly from Vishnu, and they were manifest directly from Lord Brahma. Not ordinary persons. Anyway, they were completely transcendentally situated. They could move wherever they wanted without any restriction here. But now they've come to the Vaikuntha planets, and they're completely amazed at what they've seen in Vaikuntha. There's a whole different mood there, a whole different feeling they're feeling now. You know, before they was completely satisfied, because they were born in this material creation, as a part of this material creation, or for the purpose of producing progeny for the material creation. To material creation is to give the conditioned souls a chance to rectify their consciousness. And these were the first entities coming from Lord Brahma, who is the firstborn Ajra. But they didn't want to they didn't want to be progenitors. They just wanted to. They didn't want anything to do with the material world. So they were completely transcendental to it. They weren't attached. They just wasn't going to enter it. So with this, with their transcendental situation, they could move freely wherever they wanted. They wasn't bound by the laws of material nature. They were supposed to be able to assist the living entities in their sojourn. They're not conditioned, born like other people, they're conditioned souls. And so then they became, when they got to Vaikuntha, they found completely different sensation. Although they were completely satisfied, there was nothing, they were Atmarama, self-satisfied, but when they got there, they found their senses were actually becoming agitated. So this is real sense gratification. It wasn't due to Maya, it was due to Yoga Maya. It was due to the influence of the spiritual energy, and that is the natural condition of the living entity. Living entity is the personality. And therefore, the personality means exchange or rasa. Without that, there's no exchange, and there's no personality. If someone just keeps himself to themselves, and we see they're more or less impersonal. There's no. So without that, so therefore, there's so much. We find so much variety in the spiritual world, and also in the material world, we find so much variety. Here, the variety is actually troublesome when it's not connected with Krishna. When we don't see it in the right perspective. Because we're using that, we're exploiting this variety for sensation, to experience happiness, and removing distress. But it's temporary, and it's binding. So the more we do it, then it's called the Delika Laddu. The more that laddu is so nice in Delhi, that everyone's talking about it. So if you don't take that laddu, then you're always feeling morose that you never took a bite of that laddu, because everyone's talking about it and raving about it. But if you took a bite, it's so attractive, you want more and more and more and more. So you're still in the same position. So the material world is like that. That the sense facilitation, it only lasts for a little while. As soon as it goes down, then you feel satisfaction. But after a little while, it comes up again in so many different ways, as we've actually experienced, and we do experience all the time. So therefore, we're not actually satisfied with this material sense. That's why you're all sitting here, listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, become devotees, becoming devotees of Krishna, because we've realized. To some degree, that we're not, this sense gratification doesn't actually satisfy us. We heard something better, and we have faith that this is going to actually work, that Krishna will actually deliver us the real thing, back to our real condition. But it seems quite obvious, logical, that the spiritual world, the material world, is a reflection of the spiritual world, because everyone actually wants sense gratification. We want to satisfy our senses. We want to feel good. We want that happiness. Everyone is searching for that. Nobody wants distress. So it's an indication that happiness is a natural condition and distress is an unnatural condition. That's an indication. Otherwise, if everything was just a bunch of chemicals, then why so much endeavor to make things nice here, to resolve problems and make the world nice? If it's just, you know, reactions and, you know, random chemical changes and expressions, why would we worry about that? Doesn't really make sense. It's materialistic philosophy. So it's a great indication there that the living entity is and is eternal, because nobody wants to die. Nobody likes to grow old after a certain age. Everyone wants to come back again. So it's an indication that the people are like that. People don't grow old. So these are all indications of the real, because everyone is looking for these. Everyone will agree 100%, and it's so crazy, that this is a very attractive situation. No old age, no death, no disease. Unhappy situation. Everyone would like that. Plus you have beautiful body, beautiful features, no restriction. Whatever you want, you can have. No one would disagree with that. That's what we're looking for in the material world. That's what they're trying to get materially, either directly or through some mechanical means. Therefore, because that represents Lakshmi. Lakshmi is all attractive. He says Lakshmi is all attractive. The Lord came here with Lakshmi of his own accord when these Kurmaras were stopped by the Jai Vijay. Then they became angry. So there's no, there can't be any anger in any discomfort in the spiritual world. As soon as there's anything goes wrong there, any feeling of anything wrong, then immediately the situation is righted. It's explained when the residents of Vaikuntha feel some anxiety of Vishnu, if Narayan goes away somewhere. As soon as they start to feel anxiety, immediately he returns. He's back there, and he comes in their presence. So, because you're not allowed, anxiety doesn't exist there. So, if it starts to come, then immediately it's rectified. And because everything is in harmony, you desire to see the Lord. Therefore, the separation coming, so that desire comes strong. Immediately, the Lord manifests. He comes back from wherever he was. At the moment, the devotee desires like that. So then these Kumaras are angry, upset. It shouldn't happen in Vaikuntha. So immediately the Lord comes of his own free will. He's walking up and with his entourage, with the chamaras are waving, gives a nice description here, like the pearls are swinging like on the off the white umbrella. What's the description? Like water falling from ice after a gust of wind, and very, very poetic and very, wonderful. These fine descriptions are given for our meditation, our smaranam. That we picture that, how the Lord is walking, how gracefully he walks, how these companions are fanning him, the goddess of fortune is by his side. And he gives such minute descriptions. These are for our meditation. And he's walking with Lakshmi there? Anyway, but Lakshmi is all attractive because she is the goddess of fortune. In other words, she is, from her come all opulences in beauty, wealth, strength, knowledge, fame. All these opulences, the sources of them is, or the personification of them is Lakshmi, the first, that's Krishna's expansion, of course. So, especially wealth and good looks, they're very attractive. Because if one is very wealthy and very beautiful, then naturally his fame increases in society. So he gets all that honor and respect and prestige, and, you know, so those two things, especially beautiful looks and beautiful bodily features and wealth, they're very attractive, because from them you can get anything else you want, more or less. Everything else is. So that's Lakshmi. She's incredibly beautiful. Her beauty is incomparable. But here it's saying that when the Lord is there, he's so exquisitely beautiful that, and it's magnified by the intelligence of his devotees. I don't really know what that means, but he was so attractive, but he defeated the pride of goddess of fortune of being the most attractive. So then the sages saw this, they bowed down and at his lotus feet. So here is, this thing is given a description of the kingdom of God and a description of the Lord's personal beauty, which is the greatest opulence of the Lord. This is actually his personal beauty. You got his abode, then you got his pastimes, then his actual personality. Then it says about his characteristics, his face is the most wonderful, the most attractive, his smiling face. That's the pinnacle of beauty in the creation, and that is Krishna's face. So he's given here. how he's come, and he's standing very pleasingly with garlands of flowers, and his humming bees around him. Is one hand on Garuda, and the other one is twirling a lotus flower very nonchalantly, very casually, completely disarming. His beautiful radiant cheeks and his alligator shaped pendants, which outshone lightning. Lightning is very bright. Now these earrings are brighter than lightning. So when they move, it's probably very distracting to look at his face. Then he has a beautiful nose. He's a lovely chin, his eyes are lotus shape, beautiful necklaces, his Kastuba jewel, which is also very attractive. That Kastuba jewel was churned from the ocean of nectar. It's not an ordinary thing. It's a beautiful pendant with a an image of a calf, a baby cow engraved on it, bluish color. It's so attractive. I mean, it came out of the ocean of the thing. It wasn't something really special. That on its own would be just captivating. Also, Lakshmi, she was also churned from the ocean of milk. That were the best. She was the best Vishnu took. The Kastuba was the best Vishnu took that also. Then for the demigods, for the demons who are upset, then they produced some, who was it? Varuni. Beautiful, lusty young girl, and they were satisfied to take her. But Lakshmi was allowed to choose her own husband. So she was had the garland, and she was looking shyly, and everyone was captivated. All of the humans and the demigods, the demons, all the different human-like species on the universe who were there at the time, everyone desired to have Lakshmi. But she was looking around, she couldn't find, there's no one suitable here for me. And then until she saw Mukund Krishna, then she gave him the garland. So that's her. But now Krishna, when Krishna's there, she's overshadowed by his beauty. So you can imagine all these. It says that Krishna's being is a constant festival. His body is a constant festival, which gives ever increasing bliss. Like here, the Prabhupada says the Kumaras continue to see him without satiation. They couldn't be satisfied, and they wanted to see him more and more and more. So what part of Krishna will you, when you see him face to face, what part will you actually look at? There's a festival going on all over him. The bees are there, the garlands are beautiful. And then there's lightning coming here and there, and his hair is, and then the smells are coming, and the beautiful scents are coming. The scent of his body is even greater than that. And the way he's looking, the way he's smiling, the way his gestures, it's overwhelming. You don't know what to focus on. You're completely blown out by this ocean of beauty. And he says he's given these lovely smiles and gestures which go to the core of the heart, and then you're completely finished. So that's Krishna. So you just can't comprehend his beauty. It's so overwhelming, you can't comprehend it. It's unlimited, and all of the different attractive features. But that's why they've given so many different attractive features about him again and again. So many fine details descriptions of his personality, his beauty, and his characteristics. It's unlimited. You can't actually come to the end of it. So, and this is why they nobody wants to change their position in the spiritual world. There's no competition there. So it came up before, but just like the Kumaras, they've only just come there. They've only just seen the Lord. They're seeing him, and they're blown away, and they're just bowing down, and just they want to see him more and more and more, and their senses are completely overwhelmed with all this amrit that is pouring and satiating their senses. And when it gets too much, then they faint, and when they can't actually contain all these things, then you see the devotees, they have these ecstatic symptoms. The body shakes, the hair stand on end, tears come from the eyes, the voice chokes up. And if it's more, then they faint. The body can't handle it. So therefore, they curse that in the spiritual world. They curse that, their tears in the eyes, because it's that their bhava is interfering with their rasa, with their viewing Krishna. So they find this ecstasy a disturbance sometimes, because it actually interferes. Because that's in itself, Krishna's beauty is incomparable. That is why the demigods, although they have full facility for sense, they're not interested in their sense gratification, because Krishna is there. So their sense gratification becomes more or less insignificant, although it's what everyone here desires, the topmost thing in the whole three planetary systems, sense gratification. That sense, that doesn't bother them, because they've got Krishna and they're not interested in all those. Everything else is lesser and lesser and lesser. It's like the the Kumaras are Atmarama. They've achieved perfection. They've got mukti. It's perfection in the material world. It's the goal of yoga, the goal of gyan. When someone gets mukti, it's so difficult to get because the material world is so difficult to leave. Sense gratification is so difficult to give up. Then when someone gets liberation, all the demigods come and they shower flowers on that person as he goes past their planets. They all glorify him. They're up there waiting for him to come, greeting him and glorifying Jai. You've actually achieved liberation. You know? They're still here. They're still on the heavenly planets enjoying. They know what's the right thing to do. They know the best thing to do. They know this person's achieved it. He's coming from the earth. He's just a little earthling. He's got up there. So they really glorify that. But so they had that position. They were completely free from the modes of material nature. Therefore, could move wherever they wanted in the material and the spiritual worlds. It was unaffected by that. But having gone there, then they started to actually, you know, things started to happen to them that, you know, which shouldn't actually have happened to Jhanatmarama, a person who was self-satisfied. They suddenly become agitated. Their senses became agitated and wanted more and more and more. And to see Krishna, the more how they're going to smell the aroma and hear about the Lord. Now they're seeing the Lord, and it's so overwhelming. So this is a spiritual situation. So why would somebody? They want to, you know, you're feeling there's so much ecstasy is coming in from, and it's unlimited. The varieties of ecstasy are unlimited because the varieties of Krishna's characteristics and his paraphernalia, etc. Because these paraphernalia, they're all expansions of Balaram. They're all Satchitananda, you know, entities in themselves. So naturally, they're also all attractive by themselves. So when they're on Krishna, they become even more attractive because Krishna beautifies them. Although they dress Krishna like this to beautify him, actually it says Krishna beautifies those beautiful ornaments. So if that's going on, you don't want to stop looking at him. You don't want to stop. You're feeling more and more attraction, more and more. You just want to continue seeing him. Why would anyone think of changing their particular rasa? Why would you do it? You want ecstasy in this world. You want ecstasy. We want to go to Krishna because we want to experience an ecstatic relationship with it. So you get there. You're experiencing a relationship more, million times more than you could expect. Why would you, in that state, you never felt such bliss, such ecstasy? Why would you suddenly stop and say, "Wait a minute, maybe another one will be better than this"? It wouldn't even come to your mind because you're in the middle of experiencing something beyond your comprehension that is much more than you could have ever comprehended in the material sphere. And the experience is so ecstatic. So why would anyone want to change? So therefore, in all of the living entities, all of the inert and moving and non-moving living entities are completely satisfied in that position. They don't want to change because when they're used to that Vaikuntha atmosphere, then they have a role to play in bringing Krishna pleasure. But Krishna uses them for his service. He uses that paraphernalia for his pleasure, or the devotees use it for serving Krishna. So they're completely satisfied that this is bringing Krishna pleasure. And that is the position of all of the living entities there. So Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna, although Krishna is defeating the beauty of Lakshmi, he says in Vrindavan, then in Vrindavan, it is also described that Lord becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. So poets describe that under these circumstances, though Lord Krishna is Madan Mohan, attractor of Cupid, he becomes Madan Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi in Vaikuntha. Anyway, this is so the devotees of the Lord in the Vaikuntha want to see the Lord as most beautiful. So then he appears most beautiful for them. But here, the devotees in Goloka or Krishna want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. But then, because I know that Radharani gives Krishna the most pleasure, there are so many ways to understand this. But anyway, Radharani is considered the greatest devotee of Krishna. Although everyone is perfect in their particular relationship with Krishna, Radharani seems to be different, more perfect than anyone in her love for Krishna, somehow or other. But it says in the spiritual world there's a hierarchy of rasas, there's a hierarchy of tastes, ecstasies also. Some devotees actually feel more ecstasy than other devotees. But everyone feels a full ecstasy. So even though someone actually feels more ecstasy, you can't imagine an ecstasy more than what your relationship is. So therefore, your relationship is complete. Your ecstasy is complete. You can't imagine anything more than that. Since everything is complete, then there's complete union amongst everyone. There's no competition like that. But even though there are different varieties of ecstasy, some devotees actually feel more ecstasy than others, according to the intimacy with Krishna, according to the intimacy of their relationship with Krishna. So then, because the devotees know that Radharani gives Krishna the most pleasure, because Krishna frankly expresses it, that he is controlled by the love of Radharani, then they also make her more beautiful. And the gopis, they dress themselves nicely, beautiful, for Krishna's satisfaction. So Krishna reciprocates with the desires of the devotee for his pleasure. So he's controlled by the love of his pure devotees. So if the devotees desire that Radharani becomes, competition there between Krishna and Radharani, if the devotees of Radharani desire that, then Radharani becomes more beautiful than Krishna. And then Krishna's pleasure increases more. And then as Krishna's pleasure increases more when he sees Radharani, so his beauty increases more. So when Radharani sees that, when the gopis see Krishna's beauty increasing more, their own beauty increases. He says, in this way a transcendental competition ensues and no one is a winner. Yeah. This is the spiritual world. But that is Krishna's desire, is Leela Shakti, or his Muktara Shakti, that the Yoga Maya, that arranges these things, because it knows Krishna's desire. So Krishna's not doing all these things. It's not like he's planning all these things. These things are going on by his own internal energies, independently of him. So they're arranging all of these situations so he can taste all these things. Krishna is Rasaraj, the ocean of rasa. But you can't taste rasa by yourself. You need, there has to be, right? There has to be something to taste. There has to be an object there. There has to be some means to taste that rasa. So therefore all these devotees are expanded, this paraphernalia is expanded, and these pastimes are expanded to taste different aspects, to taste that rasa in different and newer ways. That is the spiritual world. That is the purpose of all the variety there. And that's what all the devotees are doing. And so they're doing that independent of Krishna, because they know what pleases Krishna. They want his pleasure. So they're thinking of ideas, how we can increase Krishna's pleasure more and more. So they come up with these ideas. Krishna comes up with his own ideas, but also the devotees come up with their own ideas. And the other, all the living entities also can come up with their own ideas how to increase Krishna's pleasure. And because they're all perfect living beings, they're all in harmony, and their only business, their life and soul is Krishna's happiness, then they're all perfect, because they have all these, they have the facility, they're already perfect to be there, and they have all facility they want. There's no hindrance to get whatever they want, or do whatever they want, or be whatever they want, or create any situation that they want. So therefore there's unlimited variegatedness in the spiritual world. So so descriptions are given for us to think about to meditate on and realize this is actually what we're looking for in our heart of hearts. This is actually where we'd like to be. We couldn't think of a better situation. We couldn't come up with a better situation if all the best brains in the world sat down and come up with a nice situation how to live in this, how to live nicely here. You wouldn't even come near this, what's going on already there. So this is what you actually want. So once you're told about it, this is the real thing. This is what we actually want. This is what we're striving for. And we only made this much progress on the material platform with our limited mind and intelligence. We only make this much progress towards what we actually want in effect. We don't even know what we want. We don't even know how much we can have. We're so limited. But when you read about these descriptions, it's so unlimited there that they're already existing. They're going on it. That's eternally waiting. That's your birthright to be there, to experience this. And we got our 2 cent desires down here and think if we achieve them, then we'll be happy. It's completely insignificant, the kind of stuff that we're looking for to make us happy. I'm talking about spiritual, not even material. Until, don't forget it, but even our, the best thing is like completely free from this material world, liberation. It's so highly valued here. It's so exalted, and hardly anyone gets it. Because why don't you get it? Because you don't actually want to give up this material pleasure, because of attachment. That's why you can't get it. So just see how attached we are to this mundane material sphere. Just see how conditioned we are. But when you hear this, then you might, oh wow, you got so much more broad-minded. This is the... So it gives us impetus to give up this, wasting our time trying to be satisfied in the material world. And quickly return back to the, to this place where we can actually experience all these things along with the residents there. Evaikuntadam ki jay, Vindamadam ki jay, Mayapadam ki jay, Simapagutam ki jay, Silvopada ki jay, Antaigo Pramandi. Any questions or comments? Yes. Well, the question is, we can talk about Krishna's smile, but we don't know. But she's saying, what about Prabhupada's smile? So let's ask 3 devotees there who saw Prabhupada's smile. Maybe they can give us some. You all have to say one thing. 4. Ramani and Asadi, who speak first. Out of this world. Out of this world. But then also, when Prabhupada smiles, that was, everything's okay. There's there's no problems anymore. Problems don't exist when that smile comes. Oh, join us. Avalina Sumapati Swami says they were talking about trying to start the spiritual movement in the material world, how difficult it is, and then sort of Sumapati Swami said to Prabhupada, "When I see your smile, I know I'm defeated." No problems. But I'm sure all your devotees also have the same experience with your own guru, that when your guru smiles at you and or some gesture he makes, and you feel exactly the same way, that that's the nature of spiritual world. So I'm sure everyone's had a similar experience. Say something to Master. Prior to his smile, Prabhupada's smile is like an when he smiled, then it was like all of Lord Chaitanya's mercy came through that medium, and that Lord Chaitanya was pleased with his pure devotee. So when he smiled, you could get the whole ocean of mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Something like that. I can't hear very well. Indication. Another experience I had was, I was always thinking of a smart question to ask Prabhupada. I never asked him any questions, but I was thinking of a smart question to ask, that when he came, I maybe get noticed. I'd put my hand up and get noticed if he asked the questions. So I would be thinking all the time, and then finally when he came, I'd be down there, and as soon as the Prabhupada came in, the whole atmosphere changes. And you look at your questions and they're so dumb, you know. It's some smart question, you could ask some good question. Everything changes as soon as the pure devotee comes. The whole atmosphere, the whole consciousness goes up and completely different. Right, the whole atmosphere changes. Right. So that's the situation, because he's not of this material world, the pure devotee. So it's like that, you get that he's a Vaikuntha man, so when that atmosphere comes, and it just changes. So that's what it's like when you go to Vaikuntha. We're only talking about it, you know, this, and making, you know, using words to try to describe it. But when you actually go there, it's a different consciousness. You're a different person, a different consciousness. So it can't be probably described, but it has to be felt, to be experienced. So we can experience it through the pure devotees on this planet sometimes, or directly by Krishna, by his mercy, or sometimes in dreams. Yes. Matthew is saying, if Prabhupada smiled in appreciation of something you've done, it was complete satisfaction. That's all you wanted. You didn't want anything else. So that's spiritual consciousness. Just thinking of the pleasure of the spiritual master or Krishna. So when they're satisfied, there's a smile, then you're completely satisfied. That's perfect consciousness. Any other? I'd like to glorify the potency of their Guru Maharaj while you get the opportunity. Okay, here we go. oceanic. Yeah, ocean of mercy. Just oceanic, she said in the movie. He smiled was oceanic, and he smiled a lot. I enjoyed Prabhupada's stay with us more than I've enjoyed anything in my life. She became very remembering Prabhupada's stay there, she became very emotional. So that's in that Prabhupada's movie. So that means there's spiritual is alive, it's not past, present and future. So even if something's happened in the past, you get that, you remember that, it's smaranam. You get the same experience, even though it's not present, just a memory, because the memory, because the spiritual is, it's eternal. Thank you, sir. Shama Pautam ki je, 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 Shama Pautam ki je